Welcome to this deep dive. In this lesson, we're exploring Lesson 3.4, Experimentation, Adaptability, and Continuous Improvement. If you've watched the overview, this will build on that. If not, you'll still be able to follow along. Now let's go further by exploring practical examples, future workplace relevance, responsible use, and how you can build confidence with this skill.
It's great to be here.
Yeah.
This is honestly such a crucial toolkit for anyone trying to navigate the modern workplace.
Yeah, completely agree. You know, I was thinking about how we used to view building a career. We kind of treated it the same way you'd build a house, right?
Right.
You pour the foundation in college, you put up the framing during your first few jobs, and eventually the house is just finished. You just live in it.
Yeah, you settle in.
Exactly. But treating your professional skills like a finished house today is arguably the fastest way to make yourself completely obsolete.
Oh, absolutely. Because the landscape you build that house on is constantly shifting. The ground is literally moving underneath you.
Right.
We aren't in a static environment anymore, which means our approach to our own capabilities can't be static either. That's why this lesson focuses so heavily on transitioning away from that that finished house mentality and towards something much more fluid.
I think the tech world actually has the perfect label for this. They call it being in perpetual beta.
Oh, I love that term.
Yeah. Think about when you buy an app for your phone. It's never actually done.
Never. There's always an update.
Right. The developers are always pushing out bug fixes, they add features, they tweak the user interface based on how people are actually using it, and if they stop updating it...
The operating system upgrades and the app just crashes.
Exactly. It just stops working.
That is a phenomenal way to visualize the three core pillars we are unpacking today. To stay in perpetual beta, you need experimentation.
Which is actively testing new ideas, right?
Yes. Testing ideas, testing workflows. Then you need adaptability, which is how you respond when the operating system of your industry inevitably changes.
Which it will.
It absolutely will. And finally, you need continuous improvement. That's the ongoing, deliberate effort to refine your performance over time.
But let's look at the reality of implementing this, because honestly, the idea of living in perpetual beta sounds exhausting.
I hear that all the time.
I mean, even incremental tweaks require cognitive load. If I'm already managing my projects, answering emails, and just trying to keep my head above water.
Right, you're just surviving the week.
Yeah. So being told I need to constantly track and test tiny changes feels like a recipe for severe burnout. Where's the rhythm? It feels like inviting daily chaos into an already incredibly busy schedule.
That is the most common pushback, and it usually stems from a misunderstanding of what continuous improvement actually looks like in practice.
How so?
Well, it is absolutely not about chaotic, disruptive change. You aren't overhauling your entire workflow every Monday morning. You are doing the exact opposite, actually.
But wait, so how does adding more tracking and tweaking actually reduce your cognitive load?
Because you are building systems that eventually run on autopilot, which drastically reduces friction over time.
Okay, I'm listening.
Think about the lean startup methodology. It's a major framework for this type of thinking. The goal isn't to work harder. The goal is to build a build, measure, learn feedback loop to figure out the path of least resistance.
So it's about efficiency.
Exactly. Let's say you spend 2 hours every Friday manually compiling a weekly report. That is a high cognitive load task.
Oh, the worst. Soul crushing.
Right. So taking 30 minutes on a Tuesday to experiment with, say, automating that data collection, yes, it is a temporary spike in effort.
You just have to figure out how the automation works.
But if it works, you just permanently eliminated 2 hours of weekly friction. Over time, continuous improvement doesn't cause burnout. It cures it.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
Because you are systematically hunting down and eliminating those inefficient tasks that constantly drain your energy.
So it's less about constant upheaval and more about finding the leaky pipes in your workflow and patching them one by one.
Precisely. And you find those leaks through experimentation.
Which brings up a really fascinating human element. When we talk about experimenting and measuring outcomes, we are really talking about using data. And using data completely shifts the psychology of failure.
Oh, completely. It takes the emotion right out of it.
Yeah. I think about that case study from the sources, the student organization that was struggling with really low turnout for their online events.
Right. That's a great example.
The natural human reaction to low turnout is ego-driven. The organizers probably felt rejected. They probably sat in a room arguing over whose fault it was or what felt like the right move to fix it.
Which usually leads to guessing. They might just guess, students are tired of Zoom, so let's just cancel the events entirely.
But they didn't do that. They treated their communication strategy like an actual experiment.
Right, they looked at the data.
They stopped relying on their feelings and started looking at the mechanics of their outreach. They A/B tested different platforms. They compared a traditional email newsletter against a dedicated Discord channel.
Which is smart. Go where the audience is.
Exactly. Mm. And they tested professional, formal copy against more casual, friendly messaging. Then they actually looked at the participation metrics to see what moved the needle.
What they did was remove their egos from the equation entirely.
And that is the secret superpower of treating things as data points. I mean, evolutionarily, our amygdala treats failure like a life or death threat.
Right, the whole fight or flight response.
Yeah, if you fail in a hunter-gatherer tribe, you get cast out to starve. So when an email campaign gets zero clicks today, our brain's threat response flares up. We take it personally.
We feel like we're being cast out of the tribe.
Exactly. But if you adopt this perpetual beta mindset, a failed communication approach isn't a reflection on your worth. It scientifically bypasses that threat response because it's just a data point.
It's just information.
Right. You learn that your audience ignores emails on Friday afternoons. That is a successful learning event.
But to actually capture those data points, you need the right environment. This is where digital tools evolve from just basic utilities into actual engines for adaptability.
Okay, let's talk about the tools.
Yeah, tools like Trello, Notion, or Miro. They aren't just modern filing cabinets. They are the actual laboratories where these feedback loops happen.
Let's break down how that actually works mechanically, because I think a lot of people here use Trello and they just imagine making a fancy digital to-do list.
Right, and a to-do list just tells you what needs to be done. It doesn't help you improve. But a Kanban board in Trello, for example, visualizes bottlenecks in your actual process.
So how does that look?
Well, if you have columns for ideas, in progress and completed, and you suddenly notice that 10 cards are piled up in the in progress column while nothing is moving to completed.
The visual data is telling you something crucial.
Exactly. It tells you your bottleneck isn't generating ideas, your bottleneck is execution time. That visual feedback is the trigger for your next experiment.
Ah, I see. And then you have a tool like Notion, which operates entirely differently. It's essentially a relational database pretending to be a document editor.
That's a very accurate way to describe it.
Right. So if you are running these workflow experiments, you can tag each entry in Notion with success or failure, and then filter your entire database to look for patterns.
Yes. You start to see, oh, look at this. Every time we launch a project with less than 3 days of lead time, it gets the failure tag.
The tool literally mechanizes the reflection process for you.
It does. And then you pair that with Miro, which is a massive digital whiteboard. When you need to pivot based on that data you found in Notion, Miro allows your whole team to visually map out the new workflow.
You can draw the connections and see where the gaps are.
Exactly. You collaboratively design the next iteration before you ever spend the time implementing it.
I want to ground this in a very messy, realistic workplace scenario, because theory is great, but reality is complicated.
Whoa.
Let's say you're a young professional who just inherited an absolute nightmare of a weekly reporting process. It involves downloading CSV files from three different software suites.
Oh, no.
Emailing them to department heads, waiting for them to add their notes, and then manually copying and pasting everything into a master presentation. It takes 8 hours a week. It's brutal.
A classic legacy process that everyone hates, but nobody wants to fix because, quote, that's just how we do it here.
Yes. And that is where the social friction comes in. Because adaptability isn't just a technical challenge, it's a deeply social one.
Oh, absolutely.
If you walk into a meeting and boldly announce, hey, everyone, I'm moving this entire company's reporting process to a new Notion database starting tomorrow, Gary in accounting is going to push back hard.
Gary is not going to like that at all.
No. People resist sweeping changes because it threatens their competence. They know how to use the clunky spreadsheets. They don't know how to use your shiny new system.
Which is why the concept of the sandbox is absolutely critical here. You do not overhaul a critical company system overnight.
Right.
That is the quickest way to lose trust and, frankly, potentially compromise the integrity of your organization's data.
So how do you bypass Gary's resistance and actually improve the workflow?
You test on a small scale first. You contain the variables. You go to your immediate team of, say, two or three people, and you propose an experiment.
Keep it local.
Exactly. You say, for the next 2 weeks, we're going to run a shadow process. We'll still do the old spreadsheet method so nothing breaks for Gary, but we're also going to test consolidating our specific team's data in this shared Notion workspace.
Oh, I love that. You lower the stakes so significantly that the resistance just disappears.
And crucially, you are practicing responsible technology use. In the early days of Silicon Valley, the motto was move fast and break things.
Right, the classic startup mantra.
But in a modern digital workplace, moving fast and breaking things is incredibly irresponsible.
Yeah, imagine hitting send on a new macro that accidentally corrupts your entire department's Q3 data.
Exactly. Sandbox testing ensures that you are innovating safely. A failure in the sandbox won't bring down the company. It just gives you a data point.
And once you have that data, say the Notion database saved your small team 3 hours that week, now you have leverage. You aren't arguing with Gary in accounting based on a feeling.
No, you are presenting a proven, stress-tested system.
But the value of that sandbox experiment completely vanishes if you skip the most important step, doesn't it? The reflection loop.
Yes. An experiment is only as valuable as the analysis that follows it. Before you even launch that small-scale test, you have to decide how you will measure success.
Right, like what are we even looking for?
Exactly. Is it hours saved? Is it fewer errors? When will the team actually sit down to review it? If you don't build a reflection loop into the front end of the experiment, you aren't actually practicing continuous improvement. You're just tinkering with software.
That distinction between just tinkering and systematic improvement is so vital. It really begs the question, and this is a prompt everyone listening should really sit with, how can experimentation and adaptability help me grow professionally and personally?
It is the defining question for anyone entering the modern workforce.
To answer it, we can look at the underlying mechanics detailed in some of the most influential frameworks of the last couple of decades. The materials we're discussing today really emphasize the importance of understanding how these concepts work at a psychological and structural level.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If you want to understand the psychological foundation, you look at the concept of the growth mindset. It's all about how you frame challenges.
Right.
The belief that your abilities can be developed through dedication and hard work is what allows you to view a failed experiment as a stepping stone rather than a roadblock. It is the absolute prerequisite for adaptability.
Then you need the mechanical structure, which is where the science of habit formation comes in. Making tiny 1% improvements every day doesn't feel like much in the moment.
No, it feels almost invisible.
But the math of compounding interest applies to habits just as much as it does to finance. If you get 1% better at your workflow every day for a year, you aren't just slightly faster. Your entire baseline of performance has completely transformed.
And when you scale those personal habits up to a business level, you arrive at the framework of the minimum viable product.
Which is such a core concept now.
Right. You don't build a massive, expensive project in secret and hope people like it. You build the smallest, cheapest version of your idea, put it in front of users, measure their reactions, and learn from the feedback.
It is a scientific approach to creating value under conditions of extreme uncertainty.
Exactly.
It's no wonder that the biggest drivers of innovation on the planet have built their curriculums around these exact mechanisms. When you look at the resources dedicated to entrepreneurship and innovation at places like MIT, Stanford, and Harvard, they aren't just teaching people how to code faster.
No, they are teaching them how to build feedback loops.
They are teaching them how to de-risk their ideas through sandbox experimentation. This isn't just theory. This is the core operating manual for the future.
So we want to challenge you to put that operating manual into practice this week. Intellectual understanding is great, but adaptability is a muscle.
You have to break it down and rebuild it through tension.
Precisely.
I love a practical challenge. What's the protocol for them?
Pick one small workflow in your daily routine. You could be how you organize your digital reading assignments, how you track your project deadlines, or even how you filter your email inbox. Just identify a single point of friction, a bottleneck.
Like the fact that I spend 20 minutes every morning just searching for the links I saved the night before.
Perfect example. Now, design a 5-day experiment. Maybe you implement a simple Kanban board in Trello just for your reading links.
Yeah.
Move them from to read to summarized. Run this strictly for 5 days.
And the most important part, set a calendar alert for Friday afternoon to actually sit down and reflect on the data.
Yes. Did it reduce your 20-minute search time down to 2 minutes?
If yes, standardize the process. You just patched a leaky pipe.
But if you found Trello too clunky for this specific task, discard it without any guilt.
Because the experiment wasn't a failure.
Exactly. The data just told you to try a different tool next week. You are actively building your confidence in your own adaptability.
If we pull back and look at the entire machinery of what we've discussed today, it's really clear how these pillars interact. Experimentation is the engine. It's what actively drives you forward into new territory.
Right.
Adaptability is the shock absorber. It builds your resilience so you don't snap when the terrain suddenly gets rough. And continuous improvement is the steering wheel. It allows you to make those micro adjustments so you stay on the road over the long haul.
And that machinery is going to be tested repeatedly. The digital tools we rely on today are going to change.
Without a doubt.
The software suite you are spending hours mastering right now might be completely obsolete in 5 years. So your most valuable professional asset is not your encyclopedic knowledge of a specific platform. Your ultimate career security is your proven ability to adapt to whatever platform comes next.
Wow. Your adaptability is your ultimate career security. I think that's the perfect provocative thought to end on. It all comes back to embracing that state of perpetual beta. You are never finished, and the fact that you are always updating, always learning, and always tweaking is exactly what makes you so incredibly valuable to any team or any project.
Couldn't agree more.
Before we wrap up, we want to encourage you to stay curious, stay responsible with how you test your ideas, and stay future ready. Make sure you review the end of module study guide and complete the workbook activities to really lock these concepts in and put them to work for you. And we also want to formally acknowledge the reference materials that helped form the foundation of today's deep dive. The structural and psychological insights we discussed draw heavily from Atomic Habits by James Clear, published in 2018, The Lean Startup by Eric Ries, published in 2011, and Mindset by Carol Dweck, published in 2006.
Amazing books.
Yes, truly. Additionally, the frameworks for sandbox testing and feedback loops align directly with the innovation resources publicly provided by MIT, Stanford, and Harvard. These are invaluable texts for anyone looking to deepen their command of these practices.
Absolutely essential reading. Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive. Keep experimenting, keep improving, and we will catch you next time.
Thank you, and take care.